Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
104.5 The Zone with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
This is the Midday 180
served up by Wendy's on 104.5 The Zone.
Greg Cosell joins us in 15 minutes. Glad you're with us. With Chad Withrow, I'm Jonathan Hutton. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Wes Patrick, our production assistant. PK is on his way to Vegas. Vegas, baby. Ready for the first round of the games? We're going to get that way right now from an SEC perspective with Dane Bradshaw. Nice enough to join us. Falls legend on the phone with us. Dane, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Good to be on with you guys. How are you?
Doing wonderful. Before we preview the NCAA tournament, let's go back to last weekend. Of the games you've sat and watched in person, where would that game rank for you? Being in that arena, for me, it was right there at the top. Just watching it from your vantage point, wherever that might have been, Dane, what did you think of Tennessee-Kentucky?
Yeah, you know, watching it on, I was watching it on TV, and it came across as, you know, as equal as it could be to being in the arena. I mean, everybody I've talked to said it had that Final Four feel to it. And, you know, the fact that, you know, it was the rubber match, you know, in terms of the season split 1-1, you know, the stars, the coaches, everything coming together and the arena. I think I was impressed by how many Tennessee fans were there. Just because of what Kentucky fans are willing to pay, you know, to be in that arena and dominate it. And, so it was an epic one for sure. And I think even though the tournament didn't end the way Tennessee fans wanted to, everyone I talked to on their way back said it really didn't take away from what they'll recall as one of the greatest games they've ever seen as a Tennessee fan.
Yeah, sitting there, it did have a Final Four feel. As you filled out your bracket, do you have Tennessee and Kentucky meeting in the Final Four?
You know, I haven't completed it yet right now. I'm waiting till the last minute. You know, you get ahead of yourself, and next thing you know, P.J. Washington's in a walking boot. You get a little concerned, you know. So I haven't finished it yet. Of course, I'm biased. I'm going to have Tennessee going all the way. If you can't pick Tennessee going all the way this year as a Tennessee guy, you might never
That's right.
be able to. So it's I look at the, you know, the Houston-Kentucky matchup as one that could be really interesting. The Tennessee-Cincinnati, of course, I think, yeah, when I first saw that, I go, man, that really concerns me. But then you look across the board, it's like, man, what 7, 8, 9 seed isn't concerning out there? But, you know, Cincinnati in particular, just, you know, it's going to be a rock fight. You know how hard they play. I do think that they struggle to score, so I think that's where Tennessee could separate themselves, just having a few more scores on the court. But it's going to be an extremely, extremely hard-fought game if both those teams have to match up in the second round.
Well, and Dane, we were talking about this. You know, Tennessee losing to Auburn in the SEC championship almost ended up helping Tennessee and hurting Kentucky even more. So Kentucky loses to Tennessee. If Tennessee wins that SEC championship game, the committee says they would have been the number one seed out west, which would have been a worse draw than the number two seed in the South. Kentucky would have been the number two seed in the South, where Tennessee is now, and they would have had a route through Louisville to possibly go to the Final Four. But when you look at that Tennessee draw, the top four seeds with Virginia, Purdue, and Kansas State as the other three, I like Tennessee's chances against all those teams. I think there's an argument to be made. They're the best of those four. Just kind of looking at that entire South regional, where do you see Tennessee in the context of that, outside of that possible second round matchup with Cincinnati?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, top to bottom, and you can argue, you know, the draw versus the geography to it, because I do think Kentucky, while to your point, it hurt them location wise, but I thought they got a pretty good draw themselves. But I like Tennessee, and I think you know, at some point, a team like Virginia's, they're going to get over that hump, you know, like Gonzaga or Villanova. Those were teams that you ever wondered, were they ever going to get over the hump in the NCAA tournament? Was Jay Wright ever going to get them all the way? Like, that's going to happen at some point for Virginia. But you also wonder, if you can get to that point of that matchup, and you can get up 10 or so, does that team, does it kind of be in your heads like, oh no, here we go again, you know, and all of a sudden a team that hadn't been there yet is playing not to lose as opposed to playing to win. And when you're the favorite and everybody's telling you, okay, this is the year, forget about last year, you're going to redeem yourselves. When you get down, I do think there can be a mental component to that, that it won't last forever, but this could be a year where it could haunt a team like Virginia the way maybe it had for previous teams at Villanova, Gonzaga, before they eventually did get over that hump.
How do you view LSU going into this tournament? I mean, they have the talent to possibly make a Final Four, but there's a lot going on around that program. Where do you see them in this matchup with Yale and possibly advancing deep in this tourney?
Man, what a storyline. I mean, they have been living on the edge all season long, and to their credit, they have found ways to win. They win the close games, and I've had that team like seven times on my broadcast schedule. They are an extremely close group. I trust the fact that they won't get distracted. It won't impact their locker room. They're not going to just collapse, and they've a really, really good coaching staff. With that said, Will Wade is a really good coach too. And while I don't think that they will collapse by any means, but and the when you look at the number of games they've won, I think they lead the country in five overtime wins. Like, Will Wade is good for 2 to 4 points a game as the head coach. And I think if they get down the stretch, you know, because of the way they've been able to win all season long, it's not like they can't compete without their head coach. But, you know, I don't know if I have as much confidence in those close games when they're missing that critical of a piece. Now, with that said, the other part of that is quit worrying about what they don't have and look at what they do have. They have got some pros on that team. They may have arguably the best point guard in the entire NCAA tournament in Tremont Waters when he's playing at his best. And so all that to say, I still have them going to the Sweet 16. In my preliminary bracket, which is subject to change within the next 24 hours.
Dane, I didn't think twice whenever I had Nevada advancing past Florida. Am I making a mistake?
Oh, boy. I've been looking at that one hard. I'm trying to stick with Florida right now. They're one of my upsets for a Sweet 16. I think Nevada's the better team, but Florida – defense travels, man, and they can defend, and they can be sloppy to watch. It can be hard to see a guy like Jalen Hudson or Kayvon Allen that you've seen the way they can explode and look like NBA prospects and then disappear. But for some reason, man, I just think their defense is going to be there. I trust that. And then I think you're going to get 1 to 2 good games either from Jalen Hudson, Kayvon Allen, or maybe both. And I think that's going to get them to be one of those upsets.
If Ole Miss beats Oklahoma, can they present problems for Virginia?
Yeah, I think they can. I experience matters, and I've been there before when playing for Bruce Pearl that first year when he took us over, and we made the tournament, and we had already peaked early in the season. It reminds me a little bit about Ole Miss, where, you know, you're sort of overachieving throughout the year. It takes up – there's so much energy. It's not that you get cocky or overconfident. That's not the problem. It's just there's so much energy and emotion into that ride of, oh, my gosh, we're here. We're actually making it. And I don't think Ole Miss is playing their best basketball at the right time. And I do think, you know, it does matter – with the experience that in the NCAA tournament that Terrence Davis, Brian Tyree, that's just not there right now. Now, Kermit Davis has it. There's no question. He and his staff do. But I'd be shocked if they, you know, presented Virginia with too much of a problem. I have Oklahoma. I think I'm going to pick them winning that 8-9 matchup.
Dane Bradshaw, our guest here on the Midday 180.
So on the opposite end of that, Dane, you mentioned Bruce Pearl. Auburn is red hot coming into this tournament. What do you think about their draw as the 5 seed? Do you like where they were seated as the 5 seed coming in as the SEC tournament champion? And what type of chance do they have of advancing deep in this thing?
I didn't love the draw. I thought that there would have been greater reward for the run they made in the SEC tournament, personally. But I spoke with an Auburn radio show earlier today. I thought what was interesting is that you know, Bruce Pearl's teams used to press a lot more, and so did a lot of the pressing teams right out there, Mike Anderson of Arkansas and others. But when the officials were, when the officiating rules changed a little bit, you hear that, you see those cylinder fouls where you get too close to the player, and that hurt those pressing, trapping teams. And I thought Auburn, they've adjusted really well to where they're still dictating tempo, they're still turning you over, but they're not having to rely on that 40 minutes of full court pressure the entire game. And that was, you know, that's a strategy I think a lot of people wondered, you know, could that be sustainable in the NCAA tournament? And I think we just saw what they could do in the SEC tournament by not necessarily being full court all the time, but being full pressure all the time, whether that be in the half court or three quarters. I think altitude, Bruce Pearl likes to do quick shoot arounds and they're thorough, but they don't go extremely hard. And I think at Salt Lake City out there, he's going to have to roll the ball out there and let his guys maybe play 20 to 30 hard minutes of live scrimmage action and get that win. Because I've been out there as a player. We got smacked by New Mexico one year, and it was before halftime, and we could hardly catch our breath. You thought we hadn't been in any sort of training whatsoever. So that altitude can be a real factor.
What did you know about Colgate before this year? Before this week?
Boy, nothing at all, man.
Same.
I've not, you know,
you're not alone. No one knows anything about Colgate going into this week.
I'm hoping that we don't know any more about them after because we don't need any CBS specials on Colgate and some magical ride they're on. We just need to move on. But I tell you, one thing to watch for the Tennessee fans, the players is, you get in the game like that, and yes, all the pressure's on you. And this is where I do think experience matters. Because I'm an old man for testing, obviously, speed helps. But, you can be trying so hard to win that you're not playing your game. And that's where Tennessee can't get so overly anxious, get too much pressure on themselves of thinking this is going to be the year, and just do what they've been doing all year long, taking it one play at a time and playing together as a team.
You know, Colgate, they shoot over 40% from three as a team. They've got three guys who shoot over 40%. Their leading scorer is a big man who shoots 43% from three. But they're not exactly Auburn in terms of athleticism and the ability to drive and kick it out. They also turn the ball over on 20% of their offensive possessions. So a lot of people are pointing to that and saying, well, Tennessee has a problem defending the three-point line, Dane, but there's a very specific type of team Tennessee has a problem with. That team is Auburn, who can also beat you off the dribble.
You nailed it. I think you're dead on. Defending the three is when a team like Auburn that has the green light, and they shoot contested threes really well, and they're so fast. And the other thing that a team like Auburn does is when they play such a small lineup, when they shoot those long threes, it almost creates the offensive rebound to become like a 50-50 ball, because it's these long rebounds, and all of a sudden you got a guy like for Auburn, Malik Dunbar, who's not a huge guy, good size for a guard, but now he's sprinting versus Grant Williams to go get our offensive rebound. That's not an advantage for Tennessee anymore. They no longer have that size to dominate inside when it's these long offensive rebounds creating second possessions. Next thing you know, you're in scramble mode and you're giving up threes. But to your point, That 3-point defense has been more of a weakness against quicker teams. It's not just about good 3-point shooters, and Auburn certainly has that we don't think at this point Colgate has.
Dane, thank you for the time, man. Always enjoy the perspective, and love having you on the show. Enjoy the games.
All right, thanks a lot. Y'all have a good one.
Titans fans, mark your calendars for Thursday, April 18th. John McClain presents In the Evening with Amy Adams Strunk. Join Team Hutton 104.5 for an exclusive night with the controlling owner of your Tennessee Titans 1 week before the NFL draft. Thursday, April 18th at the Bell Tower on 4th Avenue. All proceeds benefit the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. John McClain presents An Evening with Amy Adams Strunk. Tickets are available now at 104.5thezone.com.